Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Text message as we head into the 7 o'clock hour. Payne and Pendergast with you. I know y'all's power is usually reserved for the Astros, but how about we hex someone for this game? Okay, and for those who don't know, for those who are new to the program, during the postseason in Major League Baseball, Seth and I, to great success, have hexed opposing players. One player per game, Payne and Pendergast hex. And it works out a lot of the times.
The hex has been the success rate was somewhere north of 90%. It didn't work out this year.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I don't know the exact number, but yeah, somewhere north of 90%.
No, totally, it's over 90%.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. There was one time I damned somebody to hell. Mm. I can't remember who it was.
Did it work?
Probably, you know, they're probably sweating it out right now.
Right.
They're just wondering, like, it's been 5 years. I'm like, well, you've got an eternity to go, my friend.
That's it.
Sorry. Sorry about it.
Better get used to it. So we can do whatever we want. We can hex. I will tell you this. We've got a loaded show stacked up here. We got Circle of Swarm coming up in about 18 minutes. Carrington Harrison from our sister station in Kansas City joins us at 8, but we will exercise past playoff demons in the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to do this.
Hey, can I ask you a real quick question?
Absolutely.
Since you're a Catholic, supposedly.
Okay. Yeah.
So with the Catholics, do you go to purgatory and then heaven or hell, or is it that like purgatory is the bad one and you just might have to spend a long time in purgatory?
No, I think it's I think you end up going one way or the other. And I'm basically
So you have to go to most people have to go to purgatory regardless, but then you go on to your final destination.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping that maybe like purgatory was the worst that it would be, and that you would have that chance to. But there was no certain hell.
I'm certain we'll get corrections on this if I'm wrong. I'm basing my entire purgatory take on Paulie Walnut's explanation of purgatory when talking to Chrissy on The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Like when Chrissy almost died, and he thought he like crossed over and then he came back and he said it was really hot there. Chrissy said that, or no, he didn't say it was hot. He said I was there and every day I got whacked the same way that I got hit, you know, I got shot or whatever.
Okay.
And Paulie's like, oh, you didn't go to hell, you went to purgatory, my friend. Hell is hot. It would have been hot if you were there. He's like, no, this is how it works in purgatory. You take all your mortal sins, you multiply them by 30. You take all your venial sins and multiply them by 25. And that's the number of years you spend in purgatory.
But I know the years in purgatory are different than earth years, too. I got to do some reading on this before this game.
He goes, I figure I could do like 6,000 years in purgatory, which is like, I could do that standing on my head. That's like 10 years in regular times. So yeah, the answer probably is I don't know, but
the text line is already full of responses. Let's move on to football.
Let's do it. Let's do football here. All right, let's get to some of the thoughts on the Kansas City side. What are they saying over in Kansas City about the Houston Texans, specifically about C.J. Stroud? Chris Jones, as we mentioned in the six pack today, is a huge key to this game on Saturday tomorrow. Here's what he had to say in his media availability this week about C.J. Stroud.
He's really good. That team is really, really good. They had some injuries, unfortunately, but a quarterback is top tier. He's patient, has a big arm. I respect the heck out of their head coach. And they got a solid room over there. They got a lot of playmakers that they can put up a real, real numbers if you give him time and opportunity to. So probably try to contain C.J. Stroud and eliminate Joe Mixon. He's been running crazy this year. You know, we was very familiar with Joe Mixon, seen him with Cincinnati Bengals. And we played him multiple times, and he actually beat us in a big moment. So we know he's bringing that energy over there, and we are excited to see him.
God, I wish Chris Jones played the way he talked.
I was just going to say, Seth, it's so funny you say that. I'm like, he's definitely on the list of guys whose play does not match their voice.
He sounds like a professor. And but he is, hey, everybody,
yeah.
This guy right here is the biggest nightmare you're going to face. Just listen to him.
Well, I'll tell you what, I feel like this is a difficult challenge we face this week.
I recall back in 2021 that Joe Mixon made some plays against us.
Yeah. the biggest headache with Chris Jones is that they move him all over the defensive line. Remember a few years ago, they experimented with kind of making him just an edge player. And he was doing well at it, but like really where he's most threatening is he can move all over the defensive line, and he plays well at any one of those positions. That last game, he had really good reps versus both the offensive tackles. He had really good reps on the interior, and it forces the offensive coordinator to sometimes alter the protection, and then the Chiefs' defense is really good at kind of anticipating what that protection's going to be. So, all right, if the offensive line slides to help with Chris Jones, then this is the blitz we're going to run. The players on the Chiefs defense are good at making those adjustments on the fly. And that's the cat and mouse game between Spagnuolo and Bobby Slowick. So, keep your eyes on Chris Jones, and hopefully it's one of those things where, oh, I'm kind of disappointed. Chris Jones didn't really show up today. I thought Seth Payne promised me a show. But also, remember, Jones has this way of kind of cruising and then showing up in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like he'll kind of take up space. He'll be having like a nice game. And then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, he explodes. So you can't sleep on Chris Jones.
He makes big plays, no question. Hey, let's skip over to the Texans defense and what they're saying on the Kansas City side about that. Matt Nagy is the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid calls the plays, I believe. But Matt Nagy is the offensive coordinator. He talked about the Texans' defensive front in his media session this week.
We have some different things that we like to do. I look back and just see, like, with us playing them at the end of the year and the way they were playing, going into that game, we knew what they presented. I think now when you look at that defense in general, their confidence level of how fast they're playing and aggressive, you felt that in the Chargers game. And that's been going on for a while. They're good football players. They lead the league in sacks for a reason. So if we don't respect that, that's shame on us. So we got to have different ways to do different things. And then there's going to be times where there's one-on-one matchups where our guys, I mean, we're all pros here, you know, so we got to lock down and give them respect. But we believe in our guys too. So I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, the X factor, it's not even an X factor. It's the factor in this game.
Yes.
That the Texans defense has to do what really this year they've only been able to do at home, which is turn really good quarterbacks into the worst version of themselves. You go from Josh Allen to Jared Goff to Tua Tagovailoa to Justin Herbert. Those were some of the worst performances of those guys' careers. And I mean, the interceptions alone with those last three guys, what they had, 5 versus Goff, 3 versus Tua, that's 8, and then 4. 12 interceptions in 3 games from some of the best-performing quarterbacks in the league. Tua, wherever you power rank him, he doesn't typically turn the ball over a lot. So can you do that on the road? And immediately I thought, man, this is a game where, as you pointed out yesterday, there was that play where Xavier Worthy knew that the Texans defense was going to play zone because he heard them call it out beforehand. Yeah. That's the kind of advantage you get at home.
Yeah.
The Chiefs get at home that you don't get at NRG Stadium. It's a lot harder to pick up the defensive calls in a loud environment. So they got to figure out some way to recreate that magic on the road.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of Texan fans, as you bring that up, that are thinking about the previous game against the Chiefs a few weeks ago and think back to the point in the game where the Texans were up 10-7 in that game. And there was that play where it was originally called a fumble, and Henry Toa scooped it up and took it into the end zone. But there was Derek Barnett caught Patrick Mahomes His arm grazed his helmet. Yep. Now, now they ended up also calling it an incomplete pass, which I thought was a bogus call. I thought the, I honestly thought the incomplete pass call was even more bogus than the roughing the passer call that was there. Because Derek Barnett's trying to reach to go get the ball, and his arm happens to hit Mahomes. It wasn't a violent play at all.
It was one of those things that, by the letter of the law, it's a penalty, but you see it not get called all the time.
Correct.
I look, whatever conspiracy theories there are there, that's what happens when you're playing a quarterback like Pat Mahomes. Those guys get those calls, like, and you just got to know it. You got to play extra clean versus them because he's going to get those calls. Going back to every great quarterback in history in the NFL, but yeah, it was that. You're right. That was a play that easily, if it weren't for the officiating, could have gone the other way.
It changes
on both
the game.
Accounts.
Yeah, that's you're up 17-7 against a team that's been playing to that point. All one-score games, you know, like that was going to be that was shaping up to be, like, at best a game where the Chiefs would need to probably, you know, I know it was still kind of early, it was the first half or whatever, but the difference in that game between 17-7 and the crowd out of the game and Mahomes still having the ball, you know, like, that was big at that point.
Well,
in the game.
And I think it goes to show, again, like, officiating theories aside and everything, that's what they have to bring.
Yeah,
even in heavier doses this week, plays like that.
That's right. What are they saying about the Texans around the national media? What are the receipts that we need to keep this time around? Because there were certainly a stack of them for that Chargers game. Rex Ryan was probably the biggest receipt. He was like the receipt you get from CVS when you buy like lotion and a contact lens solution and a bag of chips, and then the receipt is 2 feet long.
Which I've pointed out to you before, you didn't realize. There are some incredible deals on
those
receipts.
I've started keeping my receipts.
Don't throw
CVS.
Them away.
Yeah, I don't. QR codes and everything else, I keep them.
Did you get like $3 off deodorant?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And it is pretty good. The Rex Ryan this time around, though, Rex Ryan not really dishing out those CVS-style receipts.
Well, that's certainly not a bye week, is it? Oh, my goodness. I think Houston has a chance here. And because I'm not going to ignore what I just saw. I'm not going to ignore it. That pass rush was absolutely ferocious. And it wasn't just against the five offensive linemen. They kept chipping. Don't you know, your superstar right tackle for the Chargers that I can't stand is overrated as hell. But anyway, they couldn't block them. They could not block them. And so to me, yes, that's a problem. What's the Achilles heel for Kansas City's offense? Pass protection. This team, and I get it. I know they beat them by 8 points in the regular season in a game. I get it. But they look different. For some reason, something clicked to that football team, and they look different.
All right.
At one point there at the beginning when he said, I can't ignore what I just saw, I thought he was going to say, CJ used his feet really, really well. And this team excites me. This team titillates me.
All of a sudden.
This team gets the Ryan family all worked up. Did you see CJ's feet in that game?
Well, and especially the way, even when CJ's just standing there, that his feet point to the outside like that.
Like opening up for him.
Yeah, that's like a kink probably for Rex. You know, like, I kind of like the duck feet thing. I mean specifically the duck feet, you know, like the 45 degree angle. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
No, the whole thing is definitely a kink for Rex.
Right. Look, the pundit's going to pundit. Yeah. I get that. It's the fact that the line now is, what's it up to, 9.5?
It was 9 yesterday.
It opened up at 7 or 7.5 at most places, and it's gotten wider. I don't feel that is justified given the Texans' defense.
Yeah.
And I get it. It's not like I'm not offended that the Chiefs are heavy favorites or anything, but I feel the perception is a little skewed here. Even as people have acknowledged how well the Texans played against the Chargers, I think there's a little bit of the Chiefs mystique boiled into all this.
I totally agree with that. 8.5 is the number right now. So it's kind of settled in that 8-9 range right there. We'll see what it is at kickoff. Okay, so Rex Ryan, a little more respectful. He did go on to pick the Chiefs. I don't use people picking the Chiefs when they're an 8.5-point favorite in a respectful fashion as a receipt. Receipts to me are the people that just, like, they got no chance. They're laughing at the Texans, things like that. Tell me if this Teddy Bruschi take right here qualifies as a receipt that we would need to show on Monday if the Texans win tomorrow.
They were rushing a statue in Herbert that was sitting there the whole time. This is Patrick Mahomes we're talking about. He's going to convert on every third and three where you got man coverage and those guys are rushing up the field trying to get Mahomes. He'll get out of there. That's going to be the difference. Herbert had 0 yards rushing. He did not use his legs at all. This is a different beast, that quarterback.
Okay.
This was what it was curious to me out of Brewski, because the way he was describing it, it was like Justin Herbert is a statue as a player in general, which he is not.
Definitely not.
At all. Yeah. He runs the ball really effectively. That's why I think Azeez Alshire being on the field helps a lot. He makes it difficult for more difficult for quarterbacks to run. I think Azeez on that game, if Azeez had been in the game versus the Chiefs for one, that Mahomes wouldn't have had such an easy time on that one touchdown drive of running up the middle.
100%,
I think that,
yes.
I think there's, because Mahomes, it wasn't necessarily super easy yardage, especially on the touchdown run. I mean, he took a couple hits and kind of had to barrel his way in there.
He did, yeah.
It's a different animal with Azeez out there. So the Brewski painting out Justin Herbert as some kind of a statue, A, is inaccurate, and B, ignores some of the really bad plays that Justin Herbert made while running away from the pass rush in that game.
Yeah,
that one he tried to throw across his body on the Kamari Lassiter interception. He was on the move there. It was just a stupid throw.
That was a Will Levis throw, that first interception. Like, that was, what are you doing? Like,
Mahomes isn't going to make that mistake.
No.
You know, he's not going to, but you got to acknowledge that it was the Texans pass rush that had rattled, the Texans pass rush combined with good coverage downfield that really rattled Justin Herbert.
All right, so Brewski, I think, was just, that was a bad take on Herbert. I don't think it was
a racist take.
It was
that was like, Herbert's a white quarterback.
Right.
Yeah,
he's a statue.
Like, he must be a statue.
Gotta
back
a statue.
In my day,
yeah, gotta be a statue. I played with Drew Bledsoe. Yeah. So I don't think that was disrespectful nor a receipt. Now this one, this one is a CVS deluxe style receipt. Nick Wright, our good friend, he was on Within the Loop earlier this week. This is actually from his show, I believe, on FS1, where he essentially calls this the Chiefs' final practice before their regular season.
Not a bye.
Okay.
It is, however, the Chiefs' final practice of the year.
Got to go hard.
And here, I told this to Greg yesterday, and we can show you Mahomes' numbers in this round. It's very simple. LaVar Ball style, never lost. Never turn the ball over. Just crush.
That omen right here.
But here's why it's not, though. Because you don't lose a game you're not playing, and they're not playing a game. They have one final practice before their season starts. And here's how the Chiefs' seasons work. It starts in the AFC Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
If they go 0-1 that year, they have massive changes. It's happened twice. Once they fired the defensive coordinator after going 0-1 in 2018, and once they traded Tyreek Hill after going 0-1 in 2021. If they go 1-1, win the AFC Championship game, losing the Super Bowl, they look at the team and say which unit needs to be overhauled, and they fix it. That happened in 2020 when they went 1-1 and they changed their offensive line. And if they go 2-0, they hold a parade. So the Chiefs really, since Mahomes has been there, they're just 7-3.
Yeah,
just seven. They're just a 7-3 team. They've had 2-0-1 seasons, 1-1-1 season, and 3-2-0 seasons. We'll see how this one goes, but the season doesn't start this Saturday.
Yeah.
It starts next Sunday.
That makes sense.
So no, I'm not giving Houston a chance.
Okay, well that's
so they are. So this is in Nick's mind. This is the Chiefs versus Southeast Texas State.
Yes.
This is just a warm-up game.
It's an FCS
this is just
team.
A little bit. You know what happens, Sean? Some of those warm-up games?
Yeah.
Sometimes that ends up hurting you.
People get hurt.
In the playoff rankings. Yeah, yeah. So, all right, Nick. All right, you're taking on the team's identity to bolster your own confidence, which is, we've seen this. We've seen this out of Patriots fans and media members. We've seen this out of Kansas City media members. They start to act like fans where they take on the identity of the team. They just start. That was one of the most annoying things about the Patriots run. The fans are going to be annoying no matter what when their team is really good, but it's when the media members start acting like they know more about football because the team that they cover is so good at football. They act like, well, let me explain the game of football to you. All right, I see you sitting up there on your stolen valor pedestal where you haven't actually played a damn game, but somehow you're taking on all the confidence of the team itself.
Yep.
We'll see, Nick.
This is the last one, and then we'll get to the circle of swarm. Yeah, there's a lot of people that want to shut Nick up. There are a lot of people. Paul Pierce. Okay, now, normally I wouldn't care about Paul Pierce's opinion on really almost anything, but especially football. I'm not a huge Paul Pierce guy. But I do want the Texans to win because I need him to be forced to follow through on this promise that he made on his FS1 show yesterday.
If the Chiefs lose to the Texans,
it's a miracle.
I live 15 miles away from here. I'm walking
in. That's what Paul was saying in the media room. Talking about, I'm walking
in. I'm walking in on the media. I'm walking here.
It's,
I'm walking here if they lose the Texans. I'm walking here 15 miles.
They could, though.
I'm walking.
I would hate to see you have to walk.
No, that's going
to work. Because, you know, coming over that 405, it's a hill. And the hill is kind of steep.
That's okay. Yeah. I'm gonna get up at 5 in the morning.
Okay. It might take you longer than that.
Don't do that. Don't say that, Paul, because you're saying this. And right. If it happens,
I'm walking. Bro. I'm okay. Telling the world right, right
done.
Now. You can
I'm done. I'm Pierce. He's walking. We got you, Paul. 15 miles through hilly part of California. How long would it take you to walk 15 miles? Do you think?
I don't know, like if you're walking at 4 miles per hour, just a little less than 4 hours. It depends on how hilly it is.
Yeah, it sounds like
I ran a 50-mile ultra marathon once. 15 miles is just a warm-up for that.
You did a what?
I did an ultra marathon, a 50-mile ultra marathon.
How's that work? no, what's an ultra marathon? I know you didn't
walk a lot when you weigh 280 pounds. I'll tell you that much.
But I'm asking, is like a 2-day thing? Do you stop in
between? No, it's a 1-day thing with a 12-hour time limit. So, because it's really, the hills matter. The hills really, really matter.
Sure.
So, because you're like, it was around one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York.
Okay.
It was around Canandaigua Lake. And I finished dead last. 280 pounds, and I beat like the 25% of the people drop out because they're not gonna finish the time zone or they get blisters or whatever. Yeah. So it's not bad. The first 15 miles, it's just like, oh, okay, this is a nice run in the park. The 30 mile mark for me was where I started to question all my decisions in life.
Oh my God, you ran you ran the first 15 miles. When did you do this?
No, I finished them.
I heard you say you ran 15 miles and then you had to kind of stop.
No, the first 15 miles is like a warm up.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's kind of fun and easy. I did this in 2011 or so.
Oh, okay.
Around then.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Congratulations, man.
You know what happened? Thanks.
I'm serious. Like, that's, dude.
I know. It's like, no, you know what happened was I thought I was going to. There was no way. I was doing the math in my head, which gets really, really hard the more dehydrated you become and everything.
100%.
So I was on the last 10 miles, and I'm, like, doing the math in my head, and I'm like, I'm not going to make it, man. Yeah. I am not going to make it. So this old guy that was going around, he's kind of cleaning up the course and picking up the stragglers, the people that were dropping out. And he's driving by me with, like, people in the back of his pickup. When cones and stuff, he's picking up the cones from early in the race.
Yeah.
So I see him come back and it's like seeing the Grim Reaper hovering around you. And finally, he comes, he pulls up, parks next to me when I've got about 10 miles left to go. And he gets out of his truck, starts walking towards me. And I see him and I reach down to start to take my ankle band off, the little timer they give you. And he goes, nope, you're not quitting on me. And basically, he had already picked up everybody who was behind me on the course, and he said, "This is what we're gonna do. We're gonna run up to I'm gonna run next to you. We're gonna run up to that telephone pole up there, and then you'll walk to the next one, and then we'll run." So I started doing. I would run past two power poles, and then walk to the next one. And he would like drive up ahead, pick up the cones and everything, then come back. And he would pace me after that.
Dude.
And he did that for the next 8 miles.
Holy crap.
Until we get to the last 2 miles of the course. And by then it's dark out. It's getting cold because the sun's going down.
Yeah.
So like all the salt that was on my face was starting to run into my eyes. I could barely see. And he's like, "Listen, you're going to go through a park for these last 2 miles. I can't go with you, but I'll be there at the finish line." And he's like, "You got however much time there was left. It was like 24 minutes or something at that point, which I know a 12-minute mile sounds like no big deal. At that point, it was
end of that day.
I was 48 miles into this thing.
Yeah, dude.
And he's like, "Listen, you're gonna have to pick up the pace. You can take a couple walk breaks, but you got to push it."
Yeah.
And so I finally got up. I got to the last stretch, which was the finish line was in this parking lot next to a community college, where I come up over this hill to the very edge of the parking lot, and I'm like 150 yards away from the finish line, and yeah. I can see the clock. The clock is like at 11:58 and a half or
no
something
way.
Like that. And I just start, so I start running, and at that point, I really started sweating.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I could barely see because there was so much salt in my eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm just like running towards the bright lights as hard as I could.
Dude.
And I ended up finishing, I think they were using, you're allowed to finish as long as you finish before 12:01, like yeah. the 1 minute mark. Whatever it was, I ended up finishing like 7 seconds short of the limit.
Oh my
and,
God.
And like all the people who were there were like, give me a huge
hell
ovation
yeah.
and everything.
You got one of the
me.
Biggest ovations yeah. of the event.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was cool. It was cool. All because of Barry, the old guy that paced me the last
Barry
10 miles.
Is his name. Okay, I was going to ask yeah. you. Like, you were probably having Coughlin flashbacks when that guy first started yelling at you.
No, he was cool, man. It wasn't like a hard-ass way he said it. He said it very authoritatively, like, nope, you're not quitting today.
And he's rooting
and
for you.
And that, like, it clicked.
Yeah.
It was. You know what? No, it was like Coughlin or any old coach.
Yeah.
It was kind of like it just... The switch flipped immediately in my brain. I was like, oh, I'm not allowed to quit.
That guy.
And, yeah.
That
yeah.
guy was Mickey. You remember
yeah,
when Mickey?
Yeah.
Mickey showed
yeah.
Mickey's dead. Rocky's manager, he's dead. But Rocky's on the ground after getting beaten up by Tommy Gunn in Rocky V. And all of a sudden he hears, get up, you son of a bitch. Because
he had
Mickey,
like an old. He had like.
What was his name? Barry?
Like Barry. He had like an old Datsun pickup, you know, like a 1978 Datsun pickup. And he's just. Just the coolest guy alive.
Guys lived
nice
in the
letter afterwards.
Guys
yeah.
lived. He's done the Finger Lake life his whole life. Like he's
yeah,
lived in that
yeah.
part of the country.
Yeah.
Oh, get up, you son of a bitch! Because Barry loves you. I didn't hear no bell. Oh, that's awesome, dude. Did you tumble over the finish line, or did you finish standing up? Like, I would have just
collapsed. I finished
standing
up.
Okay.
It was more the issue at that point was more that I couldn't see than
yeah,
anything else.
That's
yeah.
what it sounds like. That's cool, man. That's a cool story. I didn't know that. Congratulations. That's awesome. That's very swarmy, which is a very easy segue into our, wow, we got to get to this. Hopefully not our final circle of swarm of the season, but I think the most difficult one to find just six. Here we go.
You know, D'Amico always says swarm.
What we're looking for is players, right, who are looking to swarm.
The swarm mindset, that whole mentality.
Like, we want players to have a special work ethic and a relentless mindset in everything that they
everything
do.
Everything that they do.
Who's in?
This is a special group of men. Believe it.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Texans Circle of Swarm.
We'll rapid fire this one. Text message real quick. Circle of Swarm must be expanded this week.
No.
And then the texter goes on to list like 10 guys. No. That's
wait,
right,
no,
it's
yeah, that,
six.
That is the most. That's the only rule of this Fight Club is that there will only be six. That really is the only rule. You know, we're not gonna lower our standards at the end of in the most critical game of the season.
No,
my God,
no. So it is a
tough week.
It is a tough week. It's no doubt a tough week. So I'm gonna let you go first. For those who are new to the Circle of Swarm, Seth and I have been doing it every week since week three. It's based on previous recent performance with a little bit of hope baked into it for the next game, but largely based on recent performance. And as we know, the Texans had arguably their swarmiest performance of the season against
yeah.
the Chargers last week. So, Seth, I'm going to let you go first. We each pick
this
three.
This is a really tough week. There's going to be some... it's hard. Okay. Derek Stingley.
Derek
Stingley
okay.
first, yeah.
Okay. Derek Stingley Jr., two picks. That's a good one. I mean, five pass breakups, you know, alone is that's how cornerbacks swarm, I'm told, is by knocking the ball away on passes.
Yeah. He's an all-pro this year.
Yeah.
He just did everything you've ever wanted out of him this season, stayed healthy the entire time. He's probably going to have two punt returns for touchdowns this week. So Derek Stingley.
Do you think he gets used in the punt return game? I know you and I are both hoping for it. Think it happens?
I say yes.
I think you got to empty the chamber, man. You got to do whatever it takes.
How often do guys actually get hurt returning a punt? You know, it's people. Like, it's not the CFL, yeah. You know, where there's no fair catch or anything.
Derek Stingley's gotten hurt in a bunch of other ways. All right,
I trust his hands better than anybody just for mere ball security.
But he can go back and fair catch it every time if he wants.
Yeah,
that's a good point. All right, so Derek Stingley Jr. This one's an easy one for me because we've been talking about him all week. He had a good game against the Chargers. He's been cited multiple times on multiple shows as the difference in this game versus the last game. And he would be the guy that if he hadn't gotten suspended and hadn't gotten injured earlier this year, would be the leader in the clubhouse for the swarmiest player on this team. Azeez Al-Shaair is in the circle of swarm. I think he's got to be this week. Azeez Al-Shaair must have a good game this week, and every time he's been on the field, like, he's deserved to be in here.
He is the X factor. He's questionable with an injury right now, so it's going to be a gutsy performance out of him. But Azeez Al-Shaair, my next circle of swarm honoree this week will be a guy who is just now, in his young career and in his last 2 years, has just started to really show up as a rock solid. You can count on him to have a huge playoff performance, Nico Collins.
Nico, we get an offensive guy in there. I like it.
Yeah.
And he set a record for receiving yards against the Chargers. Texans receiving yards in a game for the playoffs record in that game, too, with 122. Mm-hmm. So that's a good one.
And on that 99-yard drive, he had huge. Three receptions on that one, including the touchdown. Yeah. Yep, Nico.
Nico belongs in there. All right. Oh, boy, this is getting tricky now, man. This is getting tricky. I think the pass rush needs to be represented in this game in some shape, form, or fashion.
And there were, I mean, the guys, you go to, like, Denico Autry may have had the most swarmy overall performance because just, like, the way he manhandled some dudes, but Foley Fatakasi made some good, but Mario Edwards had a vicious sack and a half. Yeah. It's hard, Sean. I don't envy you this.
Tim Settle's been good all year, and obviously you got Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr., who are just great players. I think you just named the guy, though, and this is part based in his actual performance in the Charger game, the optics of his performance, because he embarrassed some of the offensive linemen on the Chargers, embarrassed.
Yeah.
And I do think, like, as far as necessity goes in this game, I don't think this guy that I'm about to name played in the first Chiefs game either, if I'm not mistaken. I know Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter are going to show up for this game, but Denico Autry, man, we need you. We need that performance you had against the Chargers. We need that two-sack game you had against the Jets. The junkyard dog, bad MF-er that Nick Caserio described on this very show, the guy you want in the dark alley with you, that is who needs to show up tomorrow at 3:30 for the Texans. So I am Seth, yes, I am putting Denico Autry in the circle of swarm this week.
Denico Autry did play in that last game.
Did he? Still, okay, well, he needs to play better.
All the other things that, yeah.
All right, who's your last one?
My last one is going to be simply the guy who flipped the switch himself at some point right after he took his eyes off the snap and fumbled the snap and then turned around to have a 36-yard completion to Xavier Hutchinson downfield on that 99-yard touchdown drive, and who seemed to have unlocked something in himself, letting the game come to him.
Yeah.
After that point, CJ Stroud.
I'm glad you got CJ in there, man. I'm glad you got him in there because he was on my list, and I'm like, oh, man, there's still so many defensive guys. Okay, I'm going to go on this last one. Man, I know Eric Murray had a pick six in this game and was really, really good. We haven't even named Kamari Lassiter or either Will Anderson or Danielle Hunter. You rattled off two or three other defensive linemen that could be in this thing.
Yeah.
There are so many.
I almost feel like as long as you've got one rep representative from the defensive line, we've covered that.
Yeah.
They're cool. They're a tight-knit bunch.
That's kind of where I'm going with this. And offensively, I think we've got, like, you could easily put Joe Mixon in here, right? I mean, they leaned on Mixon to close out that game against the Chargers. There's so many guys you can put in here, but I think special teams is going to have to play a role in this game. I think they're going to need some invisible yards. They're going to need a play on special teams. You know, whether
remember, this is a reward for previous performance, too, though.
I get it.
Yeah.
But D'Angelo Ross had two big plays in that game against the Chargers.
Freakishly, maybe on this show, I think an under-discussed special teams effort by the Texans in that game.
Yeah.
Well, I just going back and watching the watching them mic'd up with D'Amico.
Yeah.
And I was watching D'Amico, and I was kind of trying to come up with a workout, a full-body workout routine that would be based on D'Amico's gyrations on the sideline. He burns a lot of calories out
there.
But there was one play on one of the two special teams plays where there was a blur that sprinted past him. Like running a 4.3 40, it was Frank Ross.
It's a hilarious bit of video.
You couldn't even make out who it was, other than you only know that it's got to be Frank Ross.
He zooms across the screen. Looks like the Road Runner. He just zooms across the screen. It's really funny. There was another instance on that mic'd up too. After one of D'Angelo Ross's plays, either the block punt or the 2-point return, where D'Amico a little later on after one of those plays, I can't remember which. Came over to D'Angelo Ross after special teams made a play and said, hey, man, I didn't hug you for that play before. Like, I didn't get you, which is so awesome. You know, like that D'Amico, like his energy on the sideline, man, I say this every time he's mic'd up. I'm like, love your job as much as D'Amico Ryans loves his job.
Like, it's probably a category on his notepad, you know. Belichick always had that little notepad. You figured, like, one of his categories was probably people to fire or kill after this game. I feel like D'Amico's got a checklist of people he needs to hug.
People to hug.
So he probably looked at his notebook and was like, oh, I got to go hug D'Angelo Ross.
I'm going to put D'Angelo Ross in part because of the dynamic you were talking about with the defensive line, Seth, is I feel like this is an all-hands-on-deck game here for the Texans. And this is not picking some rando off of special teams. D'Angelo Ross made the blocked extra point for a 2-point conversion. And I think it was Autry who blocked it also. So we've got him in there as well.
Yeah.
It was either Autry and it got corrected to Barnett, or vice versa. I remember whoever they had blocking it first, it actually ended up being somebody else. Nevertheless, I feel like special teams needs to be represented in here. And there you go. D'Angelo Ross. So our circle of swarm this week, this is a good one. Derek Stingley Jr. representing the secondary. Azeez Al-Shaair really representing the ethos of swarm and the linebackers. Nico Collins and C.J. Stroud representing the offense. D'Nico Autry representing the D-line. And D'Angelo Ross representing special teams. This is what the Circle of Swarm is all about.
Yeah, and I know you won't save them, but you can save all of your, your corrections and everything else. You're only allowed six, okay?
Yeah.
There were more than six worthy this week. It's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes.
That's it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. There are three other playoff games this week, and we'll talk to Carrington Harrison from our sister station in Kansas City. At the top of the hour, he'll join us. We'll get the Kansas City side of things. We just talked to Carrington a few weeks ago before the Texans played them in Week 16. We'll talk to him at the top of the hour. Thoughts on the other playoff games? Which is of the other three playoff games, which is the one that you are most excited to sink your teeth into this weekend? I think America's got theirs, but I don't know, man. I've got one that might be different from everybody else's. We'll get into that coming up next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's a Football Friday playoff edition on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
I think everybody out there is, other than the Texans game here in Houston, I think most, you know, obviously most people here in Houston are excited for that. Compared to the other three playoff games, I think Baltimore and Buffalo is the one that's the one getting the most attention from everybody because it's the two leaders for the MVP. They should just make the winner of this game the MVP. I think it's that close. But they vote for it in the regular season. I'm intrigued by the other two games over in the NFC, Seth. I'm really looking forward to peeping the Washington-Detroit game while doing the Texans post-game show. I'm sure we'll have a TV on with that game. But I'm anxious to see Jaden Daniels go into Detroit and play a very, very, very banged up Lions defense.
Yeah. And I think I saw a question. Oh, it was from BetUS about whether Jaden Daniels could be the first rookie quarterback to win a Super Bowl. Because a rookie quarterback has never won a Super Bowl. In your mind, you're like, yeah, no, wait a second. Wasn't Roethlisberger or Brady or one of the. Nope, they're second year players. Mm-hmm. They went to championship games and divisional round games in the rookie year, but Jaden Daniels would be the first rookie to win a Super Bowl. I think, yeah, Jaden Daniels is good enough to be a rookie who wins a Super Bowl. I don't think he's going to do it on that team in the NFC this year. Mm-hmm. It's just too hard. But like rookie, he's got the best QBR on third and fourth downs in the NFL this year. Got a perfect 100 QBR on fourth down. He's just very good in clutch situations. It's just that he's going up against the team and the Lions that, as banged up as they are battle tested and still really, really good.
Yeah, and I think the Lions, they're the one seed over in the NFC. You know, Kansas City's the one seed in the AFC. But very opposite dynamics, I think, going into these games for both of those teams. We've talked about with Kansas City, they've been off for 24 days. There's a legitimate concern as to, like, okay, is that too much rust? You know, how are they going to look early in the game? They've looked rusty coming off of, you know, the bye week in the playoffs before, and this is like a deluxe bye week for them because not only did they sit all their guys in week 18, the previous week they didn't even play on Sunday. They played on Wednesday, you know, so it's like 3 weeks and then three or four extra days. The Lions played about as close as you can get to what a Super Bowl is in the regular season in week 18. They had to win that game. Now, it wasn't a neutral site game like a Super Bowl is at home, but in terms of the importance of the game, there's no more important regular season game you can come up with than one that you have to win. And if you lose, you are the 5 seed. If you win, you are the 1 seed.
Sean, this is the highest over-under in a playoff game since the Bucs-Chiefs Super Bowl. The potential for, which I feel is disrespect to the Lions defense and their beleaguered injury status and all of that. But the Lions have been blitzing a lot ever since like the injury started them out, and they're playing that dicey proposition of, man, we got to make up for some of these injuries. And we will have to blitz to do it, but now you're also facing a really good quarterback. He is a rookie, but still, but a rookie quarterback who can run. So if you blitz and Jaden Daniels takes off, Jaden Daniels' legs might end up being a big factor in this game.
You're not kidding. 55.5 is the number.
Yeah.
Holy crap. You're right. That is typically the only games that start touching the mid-50s are Super Bowls. You know, that's it. That's 55.5. And yet I feel like oftentimes when you put a spread, a total that high, it's not enough. You know, these are two teams that can really, really, really score. The other game, the Rams at the Eagles. You know, Matthew Stafford, this is an important postseason for him. Like, he can get into that multi-Super Bowl club here. And the Rams are kind of they're kind of a dangerous team against the Philly team that has a really good record, but has had its ups and downs this season just in terms of, like, the vibe, you know? Like, Sirianni was kind of teetering on the brink early in the season, and then you had the whole A.J. Brown, Jalen Hurts thing going about a month and a half, 2 months ago. It's very interesting.
You know where I felt disrespect on the Texans' behalf as I was reading about these games? The one little nugget I picked up. ESPN yet again insults the Texans. Maybe my brain is going haywire. Tell me if this sentence is right, Sean. The Eagles led all teams in the wild card round with 4 takeaways in their win over the Packers. Am I going crazy, or did the Texans not take the ball away 4 times
they
from the...
100% took the ball away.
The disrespect that ESPN.com is levying and lofting at in our direction. I will not stand for
it. You're looking at it. I'm not. Did they say the NFC playoffs or the playoffs?
They said the Eagles led all teams in the wild card round with 4 takeaways.
Okay, well, that's just...
I will not sit here. That was by Tim McManus. So it's Tim McManus disrespecting the Texans.
Receipt. Yeah. Yeah. We're keeping all the receipts. McManus, you just made the list, all right?
Having said that, I think the Eagles mop up the floor with the Rams. Mm-hmm. The Rams gave up 314 rushing yards in Week 12 to the Eagles. I think Saquon Barkley just has a magnificent game in this one, and I think that's all there is to it. They're playing in Philly. The Rams are not the Rams we once knew.
No. That's a big home field advantage for sure. Do you have a prediction or a feeling or a thought on that Baltimore? The Lamar v. Josh Allen game there.
I
think the Ravens are actually favored in that game, which is crazy.
The Bills defense. I don't think they're built to handle
not
that.
Not up to it, huh?
Yeah, and that's the way it looked in the regular season. And all due respect to the Bills and the way they play and Josh Allen and all of that. I don't know how many teams, if any, this year are equipped to really stop Lamar. I see all these takes about Lamar Jackson in the playoffs, this, that, the other thing, which I think was valid early in his career. He just kind of didn't show up early in his career. It wasn't Lamar Jackson's performance that kept them out of the Super Bowl last year. Lamar Jackson played well enough to go to the Super Bowl. His receivers and a few other quirks in that game let him down. But, this is a different – it's Lamar Jackson with Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you stop him. Yeah. So, I'm pulling for the Bills because I would much rather – if the Texans pull off an incredible upset, I would much rather go play in Buffalo. So, I am very much pulling for the Bills. But I don't see it happening, even in Buffalo.
Do you buy into – okay, so it's funny. I was having a conversation with our boss a couple days ago, Parker.
Uh-huh.
And he actually – is one if the Texans were to win this game tomorrow, is wanting to play Baltimore based on the it's hard to beat a team twice in one season theory that applies to both of those games, both of those opponents, because the Texans beat the Bills earlier this year, but more so the Ravens. It would be hard for them, hard for the Ravens.
I'm
kind of with you on this one, but I'm workshopping here.
I know. I'm trying to I'm workshopping this by putting myself in the shoes of a Baltimore radio host. If I were to try to go on air and be like, I got to tell you what, guys, it's hard to beat a team twice in the same year. I'm like,
it's really hard, and it's really hard to beat them 31-2 twice in the same year.
Yeah. Having said that, in the 1993 playoffs, the Oilers had beat the Chiefs 30-0 in the regular season, and then ended up losing in the divisional round of the playoffs.
Yes,
so there is historical precedent.
Let me ask you this: if you were a player on the Texans, I mean, Baltimore embarrassed you. They embarrassed you on Christmas Day in front of all your relatives and in front of the globe on Netflix.
Yeah.
Who would you rather play, Baltimore or Buffalo, in the next round?
Okay, so yes, that would be a factor. Like, we need to avenge.
Yeah.
We need to avenge that loss.
I'm not saying it's the smartest approach. I'm saying it from a player's perspective.
I think as a player, you say that, and then you're like, you get that old quote from Marcellus Wallace. Like, is that pride creeping in? I think that is. Yeah. I think that's pride.
It's pride
creeping
effing
in.
With you, yeah.
Pride goeth before the fall.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw aside all worldly pursuits and desires.
Yeah.
And want in favor Buffalo. Of the worldly desire of wanting to beat the Bills.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder what Texans play. I mean, none of them are going to say anything until after the Kansas City game. I don't think any of them would even say, because the Bills Ravens game is the next day. It's the next night, And you know if they win that game, they're going to get asked, do you guys have a preference? You played both of these teams. Yeah. I'd be shocked if any of them has an answer to it.
Right. No, and then that's the whole thing. All right, look, if you got to kind of rationalize your way around it so it doesn't look like you're emotionally ducking the Ravens, it's just simply the X's and O's of it. And everything I said about it, I have a hard time seeing anybody really slowing down Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry right now. I think the Texans would have a better shot of it with Azeez Elshire on the field.
Yeah.
Because all of those things, the crunch, the decision-making issues, everything else, Azeez Elshire helps a lot in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, man, those guys, they are a nightmare. And at home in Baltimore, with potentially a weather advantage.
Yeah.
You want to talk about being built for the playoffs. The Ravens, man, they are built for the playoffs.
They are.
And their defense is way better than I think they're still getting credit for. Over the second half of the season, the Ravens have been one of the best defenses in the league.
Absolutely.
But I think because on the sum total of it, people at this time of year, people love to look at the entire season stats, and that does not tell the whole story of the Ravens defense.
Good point. Yep. All right, 8 o'clock hour coming up. Carrington Harrison is going to join us. He's does afternoons, does a great job on afternoons on our sister station in Kansas City, 96.5. He will join us coming up next and help break down this divisional round game between the Texans and the Chiefs, 3:30 tomorrow. But first, Seth has an injury report.
Time for the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Injury Report. These are the biggins that we're worried about. Joe Mixon did not participate in practice yesterday with an ankle. He's listed as questionable. Robert Woods was in that same boat, questionable with a hip. Limited participation out of Azeez Elshire with a knee. I expect Azeez Elshire to play. I'm a little bit nervous about Joe Mixon, but we know he's going to do everything he possibly can to play in that game. That is your Mokarem Injury Lawyers Injury Report.